Here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3. The Fan, Brian Broaddus, is coming up here in about 15, 20 minutes. Live in Oxnard, California. His podcast partner, Vach Lombardi, is coming up at 5 o'clock, so we'll talk with him. Of course, he did the Cowboys Draft Show with you guys this year. Mm-hmm. YouTube star. I think he hit 100,000 subs on YouTube today.
Sure did.
I saw him post that, so congrats to him for that. And he's going to join us and talk Cowboys here coming up at 5 o'clock, probably right there on the tennis courts with Brian. Okay. Are you buying John Gray as a high leverage bullpen piece at 877-881-1053? I mean, the last two times we've seen him in a relief appearance, he's been incredible. It was four innings against the Arizona Diamondbacks in the World Series. Last night it was two innings, one hit, zero walks allowed. I think he passed the first test. What people will say with John Gray is what happens the first time there's a blow up inning. Because they'll say he's a thinker, and what they mean by that is he doesn't have the best internal self-confidence, you know, and that's something that, like, you either have to have or you got to be able to, like, BS your way through it to be a great reliever because of how the pressure cooker is if you want to operate in the ninth inning and maybe even the eighth inning. But he was great last night, gave the ball to did he give it straight to Garcia? I'm not quite sure. Hobie Milner got one out.
And then Garcia stepped on in there.
What do you think about John Gray? Is this the guy that we need? Maybe we didn't know we wanted?
I think, John's proven, and he did it, of course, and CY mentioned it. You know, the World Series was awesome. And he talked about it's different, you know, trying to get yourself ramped up, coming out of the bullpen. But John Gray is just the definition of everything you want in a team guy, whatever the team needs. I know he wants to start. He does. I mean, even going back to spring training and the rumors were floating around, like, could you mess around with John Gray as your closer? And he was, I'd like to start. That's what I want. Maybe he still does end up starting some games if they need somebody. But I think that he looked fantastic in that role. And as a guy, especially, that can give you some long relief if you need to watch some of the innings of some of the other guys that can come in there. Hey, maybe they only go five. You want John to come in, give you three innings to try and get to the closer. Yeah, I think absolutely. This is an incredible chess piece to have for Bruce Bochy moving forward at the end of the season.
Yeah, you know, assuming the rest of your staff stays healthy, I think you just, you know, continue to increase John Gray's innings per week, and maybe he gets some long relief appearances in there and he can get stretched out a little bit and be ready in case there is a key injury. Because if something would happen with one of your top starters, having a guy like John Gray could be, you know, a saving grace for a pennant chase or something like that. But I agree with you. Like, the versatility that he's showing, starting long relief bullpen with this team's needs, especially in light of the Chris Martin injury, I need great bullpen pieces right now. And I think it would be managerial negligence if you didn't explore this hard. You know, if you didn't look at last night and go, holy crap, maybe this is our dude. Maybe this does allow Garcia to be seventh, eighth inning guy. I think going into this weekend, can we find a spot for him? You know, Garcia threw last night, so he's going to be fresh tomorrow. But at some point soon, you're going to have one of these days that taxes the bullpen. And the next day, damn it, I want to see John Gray as your hammer ninth inning guy, just to see where that goes. You know, there is also a theory. I think it was Dave Raymond who said this, that maybe as a thinker, it's better if you just do one inning at a time. That way you don't go sit down in the dugout and have 15 minutes to consider everything and, you know, maybe get in your own head a little bit. This is just bullpen door comes open and can you be great for the next 8 minutes and get three outs? And, you know, that might be the perfect role, you know, psychologically. Obviously, Bruce Boch, he's just dialed. You know, this guy knows what to do.
Yeah, it's an absolute godsend at this point. I mean, you have a starting caliber pitcher in your bullpen. And you could see just the stuff that he's got. The fastball, the slider.
Yeah.
Like, really, really impressive.
Yeah.
So what a beautiful thing to have right now when you feel like you desperately needed it.
And I don't know what his third best pitch is, but I mean, two pitch guys are typically bullpen type dudes anyway. So I think this, you know, could be that kind of match made in heaven or perfect opportunity mid-career, maybe to look at something that could extend your career or give you a different role that you could even be more successful in. Hell of a talent, though. Hell of a friend of the G-Bag Nation. We salute him, and we hope to see him at the Rangers Toy Drive again coming up in December. Bruce Bochy saying Joc Pederson has a different look about him now. Now that we've seen multiple Rangers correct their course from the worst months of their season, what's your confidence level in Joc?
I'm feeling good about Jock right now. I mean, he's going to get a rehab start with Frisco. They're in Wichita Falls, so he's going to be out there. First pitch will be at 6:35, so maybe we can monitor that towards the end of our show.
Oh, that's tonight.
Tonight, yeah, see how he does. Because he was taking BP out there yesterday with the club. So I'm excited. I mean, Jock, it seemed like things had kind of clicked for him. Then, unfortunately, he suffers the fracture, and then he's been out for a few months. So if you can get Jock Peterson's bat even 80% to where it was in a career year for him, I mean, you're looking like in an offense where Corey Seager, it's hard to find another hitter that's any better than him in the sport right now. Simeon's been locked in. Hopefully Kyle Higashioka, we got good news about that calf, can continue to be as good as he's been at the hammy. Yeah. So, you know, the offense is really looking like it's going to take kind of the form that we expected coming into the season. And if Jock Peterson can come out, hit the ground running, man, yeah, all of a sudden things are clicking perfectly, and maybe you can chase down the Strohs here, even though they just find a way to keep winning games. It's pretty damn amazing, all the injuries they're dealing with, and they just got a sweep of the damn Diamondbacks. I'm like, can you guys lose? Could you help us out a little bit?
Yeah, yeah, you know, and I think that is a thing that can get annoying. I'm not paying attention really to who's ahead in the standings right now, because I know if they continue to play like they have, they're going to find themselves in one of these wild card spots. They will not. They will not be denied. So some teams are going to win. I don't know if it's the Mariners or the Rays or the Red Sox, but I mean, you put yourself in a trajectory now to get over 85 wins. We might be heading for a 90 win type of pace if they can keep this going for another week or two. I'd be convinced of that. So I think the playoff position will take care of itself here if you can just keep playing well. Okay, fans waiting to enter Mariners games in Seattle are being subjected to loud sermons from megaphone-wielding preachers. You seen these street preachers? I think the last time I got a lot of them, it was at the Atlanta Super Bowl, maybe five or six years ago. Like, they were dominating everything from Radio Row, and they were intense, man. They had bits. They had props. They were anti-circumcision, and they had a dude standing out there with a big red splotch on his crotch, actually, standing there in jeans, you know, and trying to point out the fact that, you know, if you were circumcised, you have done something against God's will that's very painful to the kid, you know? So it was kind of like an anti-circumcision type of, you know, religious type of rant. Ryan Langschult expressing frustration. One of the fans said, it's loud. They're in your face walking around. He emphasized the need for balance between freedom of speech and the right to not have to deal with the noise. I mean, it's a public street. You can do whatever the hell you want, right? It's a recent Reddit post questioned the legality of the decibel level of the preacher's megaphones. So we might try to get them on a technicality here. Let's just get the volume turned down a little bit. Seattle Municipal Code prohibits causing unreasonable noise that disturbs others, raising questions about the legality of the preacher's actions. I always thought your conversion rate would be low. Like, you know, you're a man of religious faith, Chief, and I think for a lot of, or at least some religions, like going out there and spreading the word is an important part of, you know, everything that goes on inside that religion. But
yeah,
with
it's
that
what
technique,
you're called to do, but yeah, the technique is
it's more trolling.
It can be off-putting and extremely heavy-handed.
I don't think they're doing the Lord's work there. Can I just say that? You know, I think they're making people think negatively about the religion instead of positive.
Like, what the hell, dude? Okay. Calm yourself.
I think the Cowboys are going to be okay at corner with Bland and Elam. I think that's one of my takeaways right now from Kyrie Elam. Like, I'm pretty sold he's going to be at least okay. But the video last night from Siobhan Revell, did you guys see that? Did you guys see the video of him?
He was like catching a ball?
Yeah.
I saw it a little bit. Didn't look great, huh?
No, I paid a lot of attention to it. And I thought his deceleration, and Diggs was the same a couple of weeks ago on that pass that he caught down there in Florida. So I bring that up because Dolphins cornerback Artie Burns expected to miss the 2025 season, tore his ACL. I don't know if that's going to make Miami pick up the phone and start calling these free agents. And we've talked about the five or so that are out there, free agent corners who are about starting level or somewhere on the edge of starting level, depending on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. Is Miami going to start calling these dudes? Do the Cowboys need to call these dudes? I can't be confident in Diggs right now, and I can't be confident in Revell. I'm gonna think of that like maybe around Thanksgiving, maybe week 8. I don't know.
Yeah, and to be fair, you can't even be super confident in Elam. You can't be super confident in Keymon Hall or Kalen Carson. Like, I think it's a no-brainer that you should be picking up the phone and calling some of these guys that are still out there. I know the Dolphins have a an offer out to Rasul Douglas, who's one of the you know, quality veteran corners out there who's got some experience. So he obviously hasn't taken that yet. He's maybe looking for a better opportunity. Maybe Dallas would be that. But yes, I think it's a no-brainer for them to bring somebody in.
Yeah. It's also a no-brainer for national outlets to really dive into this Micah Parsons, Jerry Jones story. You know, I think Adam Schefter was on Get Up saying there needs to be a reset in these negotiations because it's getting frustrating and it could reach a breaking point. Calvin Watkins on with ESPN Radio asked if Jerry is the biggest problem with the Cowboys in light of the Micah drama this week. Here we go.
What would you say is Jerry Jones' relationships with his players? Is it the type of thing that they would take this personally, or do they just say, that's just Jerry being Jerry?
Yeah. I think Jerry has a good relationship with his players for the most part. I would say Jerry has better relationships with players than any owner in the league. Jerry talked to Mike in the offseason. Micah said, hey, I need to talk to you. And Jerry was like, okay. They talked about the contract. And then Micah asked Jerry, can I have your number? He said, sure. And only three or four players on the team have Jerry's number. That's Dak Prescott and Micah Parsons. And maybe it might be the only two players that have the owner's number. I bet you ask the Steelers, how many Steelers players have the number of their owner? I would say zero, right? So Jerry, I think, has a great relationship with his players. If you look at the history of the Cowboys, when players retire, they love Jerry. They always come back to the star. They're always talking to Jerry. They're always yucking it up with him, especially the guys who've won titles with him. I would say anytime you're in contract negotiations, it's going to be contentious, which it is right now between Micah and the Cowboys. And it was between Dak and the Cowboys. But then once you get your money and all that kind of stuff, everyone kisses and makes up. I wouldn't say Dak is as close to Jerry as maybe some other former players are, but Micah seems to have a pretty good relationship with Jerry, and I think right now he's a little frustrated with the lack of progress in his contract talks. And whenever they get this done, whether it be in late August or the night before the Eagles game, which is, you know, remember Dak got signed the morning of week one in Cleveland, everybody will be happy.
Yeah, everybody will be happy. I think Jerry is well-liked, and I think that's because on the front end of a lot of these, he'll, you know, explain to the player that this is part of, you know, the drama, the soap opera 24/7, 365 of your Cowboys. And I think Jerry Jones here is getting the single greatest return on investment for dollars spent in the history of advertising. You know, maybe he has to give Dak a few more million or Micah Parsons a few more million after they wait until the very end and the Cowboys actually have to do a contract or lose the player. That's when they'll ultimately sign him, right? So for a few extra million dollars, you get somewhere between 6 and 18 months of national media outlets constantly talking about you. But wait, it gets better, Chief. Because in the NFL, because of the salary cap and the salary floor, all teams over a long period of time end up spending the same amount of money. Right? So while he is giving Micah or Dak more money, it's actually going to, over time, all even out to be the same amount of money that each team spends. So he doesn't even have to spend the $2 to $5 million extra to get all of this brand exposure. This is actually just free. And I think Jerry Jones understands in a league where only one cheapskate with the Bengals, which are basically an irrelevant brand, yeah. Only one other team is doing this. Everybody else is getting their deals done early for the most part. There's an occasional TJ Watt or Miles Garrett or something, but those stories like rise and die within 20 days. Jerry holds this thing out there to just print impressions, millions and millions of impressions for free. And I think, you know, I don't know if the players understand that totally, but to me, it's obvious. Like the Adam Schefters or the ESPN radios or whatever, like trying to talk about this and create a real drama, it's laughable. I think the only reason they're not spelling it out, because they have to know what time it is because it would be kind of like shooting the golden goose. You know, it's what they do as an insider is pretend like, you know, all of this stuff is super, super important and Micah Parsons could leave. Could the Cowboys? No, none of that stuff is happening. We've seen so many of these. When the actual deadline happens, the Cowboys will just give the guy what he wants.
Right. It's just another example of winning not being the priority.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And but that's the frustrating thing. Like, okay, yeah. Cool. You're the master marketer, all that kind of stuff. That's great. It's great for you and it's great for your bank account or whatever. But it's certainly not great for winning. It's not great for your fan base.
No.
So that's where the frustration comes. Like, big picture, yeah, they all end up spending the same amount of money. But in no one year Did you put a team together that can really go toe-to-toe with the teams that did go all in because they were prioritizing winning? You don't do that.
No.
So that's what really sucks.
Right, because I feel like the Cowboys will be talked about in a different way. If it's not because of the contracts and it's not Micah or even last year, he's like, I have no urgency to get CD done. And then CD
But it does go quiet, well, Chuck. It'll go quiet for a couple of weeks in June. It would be quiet.
And that
right
ticks
now
him off more than getting his ass kicked in January.
He wakes up like his ears are ringing because there's not a buzz about the Cowboys.
Sure. But once we're in training camp now, it's like, hey, if you went ahead and just got this thing done today, like people are going to be excited and talking about, well, look at this clip of George Pickens and CD Lamb, right? They'll find other layers and other talking points to discuss when it comes the Cowboys. I could see you like, hey, we're not going to get this thing done in May, June. We're going to hold it until we get out to Oxnard because we want to have those storylines. That makes some sense.
I mean, what if he holds it another year, right? And then you hit the tag. Now you get 3 years out of it. You could get years. And what if you start losing? At least this is holding up, you know, the interest level or the talkability level in your football team. I think Jerry is really good at that. I think he's really good at the relationships with his players. What he's not good at is realizing the league has changed significantly. In the post-Jimmy era, or really the post-Switzer era, the post-championship era, late 90s to early 2000s when the Giants won it in 2011, five wild card teams won the Super Bowl between 99 and 11. Before 99, only one had.
Yeah.
After 99, only one has. You know, the problem is that that 12 year period was really an outlier that Jerry Jones is still kind of thinking or team building around the idea of we just have to get in and then something big can happen. You know, I think, hey, we had Norv Turner and Jason Garrett in the 90s and 2000s, and the offense is working really good. So I see the motion kind of stuff, but do we really need to insist that our coaches are installing this kind of stuff 2016, 2017? Nope. All the way until 2025. So, you know, now that Shoddy is here, I think they have a great chance to schematically catch up. But who's going to be that guy, you know, maybe in an Adam Pacifica role, who's like their salary cap guru or whatever? They need a guy in that role to do what Shoddy is doing for the scheme, for the Cowboys' understanding of the salary cap. Because Jerry's not going to figure it out on his own. He's got too many oil and real estate deals throughout the day distracting him from, you know, what should be his number one passion. Okay, it's the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. We're coming back with the C-Note Cowboys news of the evening. I think Brian's going to be sitting down on the tennis courts and unloading his notebook with you, really. Dak Prescott's coming up at 3:45 on the podium at the tennis courts. Our training camp coverage is brought to you by the on-time experts, Rhino Shield, and Yardbird Southern Table and Bar. To the G-Bag Nation, home of the Cowboys, and we're back with the C-Note here on The Fan. Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Training Camp 2025 rolls on in Oxnard, and Brian Broaddus is set to join us on the heels of today's third practice. Segment of the nation brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214-817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Frankels, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Dak Prescott's going to take the podium coming up here in about 20 minutes. Our training camp coverage brought to you by the on-time experts, Rhino Shield and Yardbird Southern Table and Bar. And I believe we got Broaddus on the tennis courts, buddy.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good afternoon, boys. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. What do you think is the most important thing right now? To me, it might be, I'm just wondering about Terrence Steele's ankle that we've been reading about.
Yeah, it is the right ankle. And so they're doing further tests on it. I have not heard anything. My guys are all working on the field. So hopefully after practice that everybody gets inside, that maybe I could start putting some texts together and see if we can figure out. But I do know that he went for some tests, some further evaluation on it, and so that's kind of where we're at right now.
Was there a moment where he went down, or was this just
no kinda, he never got to the field. Yeah, I was down there. I was watching the offensive lineman work today and just noticed he wasn't part of it. I was trying to figure out if Clayton Adams was in fact coaching this offensive line like I thought he might be. But it is Connor Riley who's coaching all the drills and stuff like that. And Coach Adams is behind just observing, and occasionally he'll pop in, and if somebody's not in the drill, he'll go over and coach a little bit. But this looks like it's it looks like it's Connor Riley's show as far as the offensive line go. But that's where I first noticed no steal that at that time.
Okay, so Hakeem Adeniji signing, right?
Adeniji.
Former Cincinnati Bengal.
Yeah, he was the and it was interesting because maybe I thought that that you'd get Awesome Richardson on that side, and they'd also used Nate Thomas on that side, but both of those guys were staying with the left behind Guyton, and did not make that move over to the right side. So it was Adeniji getting the first opportunity.
I wanted to ask you about Thomas today. I guess this is a perfect time to do it because I saw Nick Harris, he tweeted the quote from Shoddy saying this guy, he was a seventh rounder in 2024, didn't play because of knee tendonitis. Do you think he's got something?
Well, it was interesting that he's always been a guard, and I know Zach did some evaluation of him from Louisiana, formerly Louisiana Lafayette, and he's a guy that's kind of primarily been an inside player, and then we started watching the OTAs and minicamps, and he was the backup at right tackle, and so they're working really hard with him. I mentioned about with Clayton, coaching guys up individually behind the drills and stuff like that. Thomas is a guy that they pay a lot of attention to. So Shoddy was probably throwing it out there in a way of like, hey, we feel like this guy's got something to him. He does have size. He does have some power to his frame. The footwork stuff when you watch the drills. A little bit of a guy that you wouldn't say is very nimble, but overall, though, again, the upper body power and stuff like that, they probably feel like they can get something out of that.
So watching the offensive line, what'd you think overall today? I mean, how is Tyler Guyton doing? It looked like Donovan Ezeraku, again, just continues
to be... He's a problem.
Yeah. So disruptive.
And I mean that in a very complimentary way. Todd Archer and I were, talking about this, and Archer even lent to me, he said, listen, I texted somebody in the organization last night and said, hey, in a good way, Donovan Ezeraku is going to be a problem. And, as soon as we were talking about that, Dak had an interception today down in the red zone period that it would have been a sack. The ball would have never got off. Guyton got beat. And Guyton's had some good practices. I'm not saying that Guyton is busting on every single play or anything like that. But, this time Ezeraku lined up as the right end. Just was in, and I looked at Archer. I go, was he offsides? And the official didn't throw a flag.
No.
He was that quick, but he was on Dak. You're not allowed to hit the redshirted quarterbacks, and it would have been a sack. That ball would have never got off. With the way, but that's kind of the way that Ezeraku has been playing as far as a pass rusher. It's been him. It's been Fowler. The guys that have worked in. Sam Williams has kind of took a role as the guy behind those two guys practicing.
Your buddy Vach, your podcast partner Vach, posted four of those reps of Ezeraku against Guyton, and he's going to come join us on the show here coming up at 5:00. But I wanted your thoughts because I know one of the critiques of Tyler Guyton in year one was he's reaching. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for that. Is there ever a good time a tackle should be reaching?
Well, not in pass protection, because what's happened is this guy is a very long-limbed guy, and so he doesn't have a lot of upper body power. But, man, you watch the footwork drills and things like that they do. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is like – he's like one of the Rockettes in New York City.
He's gliding out there.
Oh, yeah. Man, it's just like they run a backside cutoff, and like and you're taught to get your head to the front side, if you can, to the front side or play side of the defender. And he does that with ease. Now, yesterday there was some good reps with him with the knee bend and able to like the punch, and he's trying his best to kind of compensate for some of the lack of power. The reason he leans is he tries to headbutt at times. He's so conscious of not being able to stop a defender to make him like start, stop, and then start again.
Uh-huh.
He's headbutting the defender in a way to stop him instead of like sitting down like with a Tyron Smith. Tyron Smith would kick, hands, patient, wait, and then stab. But he would be sitting down in position, and then the strength would be able to hold him off that way. So his leaning problems are when he gets real sloppy is like he doesn't have the confidence that he could sit down on a guy and extend his arms.
Man, I'm seeing a clip here, Brian, when talking about this offensive line, and it is Booker just walls off Mozzie Smith, gets him turned. And then you're seeing Cooper Beebe climb to the second level. He gets Jack Sanborn. I mean, these three in the middle with Smith, Boober, Beebe, and Booker, it's heavenly.
This is a gap scheme. This is going to be a power run. This scheme is going to be gap. They're going to get hip to hip, and they're going to push, and they're going to push that down lineman into a linebacker, and then that's how they're going to block. There's going to be nothing pretty and nothing fancy about the way that these guys are going to block. I mean, they're going to cut off the backside, and you're absolutely right. One of the nice cuts that Sanders was able to make was they got Smith and Beebe got together and pushed it, and then they were able to second level get a guy up on the second level, and then Sanders was able to make the cut off that. Later in the practice, Deuce Vaughn did the same thing. They got some push, hip to hip. They got one guy off second level, and then here we go in the running game.
I think Walchuk's onto something here. Could we get this off the ground when we have Booker and Beebe doing double team blocks?
The boober block.
Yeah, good sounds combo. A good combo for sure.
Get some shirts made that just say boober.
I'd like to get a glimpse of those.
The boobers.
Brian, I love that. And this is Woolchuck's birthday show, by the way, Brian.
I want to say happy birthday to you, sir. Thanks, buddy. Roast tonight, right? You got that?
6:20.
All right.
What about the read option pull stuff for Dak Prescott?
Yeah, you know what? More prevalent and more noticeable with the other guy, with Joe Milton. Yeah. Matter of fact, the play of the day, and I know you asked about Dak, but I'm just going to say play of the day for me was Joe Milton. They're going to pull that ball. They're going to run the back going left to right. He's going to pull it, and he's going to start to his left. And then all of a sudden, like, he's in trouble because Wheat's right there in his face, the defensive end, and now he gets to the outside, and as he's breaking to the outside, he realizes he can't get past Wheat. So the next thing you know, he drops down sidearm and fires a shot. He's got Turpin coming across the field, and he throws it underneath Wheat in between the defenders, and it hits Turpin on the move. So kind of the play of the day, if you're talking about a read, a pull, and then, like, I can't make it and now be an athlete. And good job by Turpin to just keep running on the play and not give up. And Joe was able to get him the football.
It's a hell of a pass. I saw that one on Cowboys Twitter last break.
Yeah. Well, and the thing with Dak, that's something I haven't seen. Like, he did have a scramble run where things broke down. They got everybody running up the field, and it was kind of a jailbreak. And Dak was able to escape middle right. And he ran and then made a move or two, and then, you know, again, nobody hitting him. But he did like duck down, get small, get through all that trash, and then go for the daylight as he saw it.
Milton's exciting, though. Do you think with time and experience?
He's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I call it uncomposed or needs better poise.
Yeah, it is some wild-ass football. And in a way of like, you know, like, he will do some things that you're just like, you can't get away with that, you know. Yeah. And I didn't know how he was going to complete the pass. I thought, okay, he's running out of bounds. Wheat's got him. And he just stopped. I mean, just literally just stopped and just dropped the sidearm and just fired that thing. It's like he just realized, okay, I can't run, but here I'm going to try and make a play. And he did. He pulled it off. It was very similar to what he did, like, in the New England Buffalo game, where he's running and he stops and he throws the ball to the middle of the field. And you're like going, okay, you shouldn't do that, but he got away with it. He floated an interception, though. He tried to fit one in there down the seam, and it, unfortunately for him, it just, the ball floated on him, trying a little bit too much touch. But the defense has done a good job with these turnovers. I mean, they're hammering at the ball, even though they're in helmets and jerseys. The interception stuff. Dak went over to Elam yesterday and said, "Bro, I never saw you. What were you doing? I mean, can you help me a little bit?" And Elam tried to explain to him, like, "Yeah, we were in this coverage and that." So, the defenders are doing a really nice job of putting themselves in position to make plays.
If you had to play a quarterback other than Dak this week, is it Milton or is it Graham?
Yeah. Yeah, I played Milton. Nice. I played Milton. It's going to be wheels off, wild ass, whatever you want to say. You know, you got a chance to really probably turn the ball over a few times, but you also have a chance to make some big plays. I mean, his willingness to throw the ball down the field and like I said, adjust his arm angle, the slot of his arm to make throws, the fact that he has the mobility, anything. Like I said, if you wanted to, you could play college offense with him and maybe give some people some problems. He might have 86 yards rushing at the end of the day, kind of a thing. That's what I would do.
It's going to make preseason a lot of fun because I heard Nick Eatman was like, man, hey, Joe Milton could end up leading the NFL in rushing for the preseason. But, I mean, the Eberflus defensive stuff with the turnovers.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been a top 10 coach in terms of as a defensive coordinator. His defense is always in the top 10 in turnovers. That's a carryover for Marinelli.
Yeah, they do all kinds of drills, and sometimes you're watching practice and you go, boy, that's useless. It's all, you know, why? You know, but they really do drills where they work on tip passes, they work on picking off fumbles off the ground. They have coaches throw the ball, spike the ball on the ground, it bounces all crazy and everybody's picking them up and running with them and stuff. So they're trying, and you know, you had some guys yesterday, Donovan Wilson, you know, they throw the ball to Williams in the flat and Donovan Wilson runs over and just hammers it out of his hands. It's on the ground, they pick it up, it's going the other way. So they really are trying to create turnovers for this defense and going into day three.
Great stuff. Brian will have more in Krusty's Corner coming up at 4 o'clock because up next, Dak Prescott's going to be on the podium. We are looking for more info on Terrence Steele's ankle. The injury reports brought to you by Greystone Roofing. They've got you covered when the hits keep coming. Dak on the podium next year on the Fan. Thank you, Lucius. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. Dak Prescott will be addressing reporters shortly at the Cowboys training camp facility in Oxnard on the tennis courts. Our coverage brought to you by the on-time experts Rhino Shield and Yardbird Southern Table and Bar. And I guess Dak's kind of on the hot seat. Let me throw some love to Wild Fork Foods, wildforkfoods.com, elite game day grilling favorites. We will be out there joining Broadus starting Monday. And KNC's been doing a great job this week. Brian, how's everything going?
It's going great. It really, really is. Super excited to continue to watch practices. The practices have been actually really very entertaining from the aspect of, you know, you're seeing that sometimes play to play, offense win, defense win. You know, it's not really one team just completely dominating the other or one side of the ball dominating each other. And, you know, you're having some guys making some plays, some guys that you really – you know, you really never thought about that were making some plays like today. You know, Zion Childress had an interception. I'm thinking, wow, who's number 48 making an interception down there in the red zone? But that's what you had this so far in this camp. You know, a lot of questions that we're trying to get answered. But, you know, I tell you, I thought it was a pretty good practice from the aspect, too, of tomorrow they've got an off day here. And you just worry about them just kind of thinking that, you know, maybe we don't need to just kind of get through it and then go to the off day. But it's, boy, I'll tell you, Schottenheimer's got them motivated to practice well. And for 3 days, they've actually done it.
It's interesting because Mike McCarthy would always be talking about, we need to get the GPS numbers down. These guys aren't running enough. And Schottie wants them running even more, right? What do you know about that?
Yeah, no, he is all about that. And he even talked about Solomon Thomas being the guy who is kind of the ringleader of making everybody run. And Solly, when you watch him play that three technique and how active he is, and he's chasing the ball, but man, everybody here's chasing the ball. They want those numbers up. They're concerned about conditioning. They want to make sure that they're ready to go. It's not like, hey, let's baby these players and just get ready for the season. I mean, they are legitimately trying to do some work. Hey, real quick, guys, I also reached out to try and maybe I'll get an update on that ankle injury if I can. I'll just jump in with it as we get it going. But I did reach out at the break, and we'll see if I get something answered here pretty quick.
Yeah, we got Terrence Steele missing practice today with an ankle, and Deron Bland still out there with the family situation.
And we got Murray too. Kenneth Murray is also having a child as well. So,
cool.
You know, so that's why he was not on the practice field as well.
Well, let's go to the second level of that defense and talk about then what you're seeing from Leafau. Did he stick out to you today, or any of the linebackers?
Yeah, and I'll tell you the linebacker that's you know. And by the way, Leafau was in position. It was Sanborn and Leafau were the ones that made up for Murray today. And then also we've seen I've seen Damone Clark. And listen, I'm the LSU guy that loves LSU guys. But, man, I threw a lot of dirt on that kid. Mm-hmm. I did not feel like that. I didn't feel like the instincts and all that. But it looks like to me he's got a really kind of a new lease on life. You got Matt Eberflus is coaching the linebackers. You know, I was watching that yesterday. So, you know, maybe they've kind of unlocked something from Damone Clark. But he has clearly shown, at least for the first three practices, that he's not out of place, not out of position. Playing when they stacked a run one time. He was involved at the point of attack, stacking it up. So, good for him being part of all that and trying to kind of fight his way at that crossroads, trying to fight his way to the right path.
Is it Izzy Mukwamu getting most of the slot corner work?
Nope. Nope, it is not. It actually on the other side. It's Keeman Hall is getting okay. So Izzy.
Go me green.
Keeman Hall is getting the slot work. He's the number one slot, and then the number two is Israel Mukwamu. That's how they're working this right now.
How do you feel about them as a group? Miami had a corner go out today with a torn ACL. I figure the phone's going to start ringing for some of these veterans. Are you satisfied with what they have?
You know, if you want to say satisfied, they're still Pickens catching the ball, CD catching the ball, which is good. Ferguson catching the ball, all that's good. They look a little thin at times. When you're starting to talk about Andrew Booth on one side, today, and then Carson is trying his best. There was a couple of plays where the ball went in front of him. He had to drive on it. Pickens and also Lamb. Those are tough covers for Carson, but he's trying to be competitive. I still feel like that this team needs cornerback help. They really do. I mean, I'm watching these guys work with Britt Brown and stuff. And we're all hopeful about that. Hopefully, they get Revelle at some point in time and let him start to practice. And maybe work in here, but it's kind of like it's Elam, it's Booth, and then it's a lot of other guys, and it's not the prettiest thing at times.
Are you hearing anything about Revelle? I saw the video last night, and it's hard to put too much meaning into 10 seconds, but I did not feel like he's capable of starting and stopping fast yet.
Well, they feel like that he feel like at some point in time he will be practicing training camp. He will be it's not something that's going to likely go into the season, just the indication that I got that like, hey, he's he was another guy that was working in Dallas, and then all of a sudden after the draft then Britt Brown picked him back up, and so now he's maybe he might be a little behind, but I just know talking to people, they were expecting him. When he gets to be 100%, they're going to put him on the field, and hopefully it's in here the next 3-4 weeks.
So you're thinking week one for Revelle still on the table?
It's a possibility. It absolutely. But every day that goes by, I'm not saying maybe as a starter, but if you had to say, Brian, tell me who's starting week one against the Eagles on that Thursday night. My gut feeling it's going to be Bland, Hall, and then also Elam would be the three.
Any takeaways? I saw one rep, Solomon Thomas, did get the best of Tyler Smith, and nasty spin move there. But is it Thomas and Osa? Are those the starting two defensive tackles right now?
Yeah, those are two. And it's funny, Jay Toya, they're now Mozzie is playing some three. I mean, they're gonna play. They're trying. Zach, help me with my guy who they signed. They drafted
Akeem Bisoute.
Akeem Bisoute. Okay, I just want to make sure I had Akeem Bisoute's name right. Akeem Bisoute is been playing as a one technique with Mozzie playing as the three. Now Akeem Bisoute, he is a 312-pound guy. So we talked about this a little bit. We could see some slant front, movement of front, not play nose to nose with some of these teams just because they might be a little bit of a lighter group up front. Just stay on the move. They've made some plays with their edges being able to play down and like slant inside and then make some tackles for losses. They had it happen. Fowler had one. Williams had one where they were on the move and then they were just able to beat the block. So this might be a team that does not have a traditional nose tackle. And I say that also too with, you know, with JT, he's they ran a twist game with him. Here, a big old man coming around the horn on a twist, but they, you know, they're trying to be a little bit more active up front, but they might not have a traditional nose as we talk right now.
Any sign of Dak Prescott yet?
Negative. The camera guys are setting up. They're white balancing the cameras right now, okay. and then as the media is start, well, the media will start showing up, and they'll sit in their seats, and then Dak will walk right by me. And so hopefully he doesn't flip me the bird or anything like that, and we can go on with our lives.
Well, that would be outstanding. I'd love to hear from the Cowboys quarterback here early on in the next hour. Might have more time for Krusty's Corner as well. You good with that?
Absolutely.
Right on,
absolutely.
Brother. Right on. Let's do this. A lot of Cowboys football to talk as our training camp coverage continues. And we're back with Dak and Krusty's Corner and more coming up next here on the G-Bag Nation.